98 FM's Now That's What I Call Sport podcast.
It's a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98 FM.
98 FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there, good morning. You are very welcome to the That's What I Call Sport on 98 FM. It's Jamie Moore here, just before 9:05 on Sunday morning in Dublin. And massive news overnight, the FAI Chief Executive John Delaney has resigned, but he's now the Executive Vice President, so we're going to hear all about his new job, how busy he's going to be, and also the news of Richie Sadler or Darren O'Dea on that, plus Sean Maguire and Mick McCarthy, the Ireland boss, on last night's 1-0 win over Gibraltar. And Mick was very, very rudely interrupted during his post-match press conference last night.
Sorry if I'm interrupting your phone call, I do apologise. You alright there? Anyway, I forgot what I was saying there.
So it appears a journalist's phone rang at the press conference, and then when Mick McCarthy told him that he was sorry for interrupting him, he kind of had a bit of a choking fit, and I'm not sure if he took the call or not. Anyway, Mick will get serious as well and tell us how he really hated being involved in that game last night despite the win. We'll also be joined by the future Ireland senior manager and the current Ireland under 21 manager Stephen Kenny on the morning of his first competitive game in charge. The young boys in green are against Luxembourg at Tallaght Stadium at 5 o'clock tonight. But has Steve even been getting down with the kids?
We've only been together 3 days, yeah. Really. So it's early days to make sweeping statements in regards to my impact.
You've got a Snapchat account, don't you?
Yeah, has Stephen Kenny set up a Snapchat account to communicate with his young players? We'll find out in a few moments' time. Plus, give you the chance to be at Ireland v Georgia at the Aviva Stadium this coming Tuesday. And then it's all about the Special Olympics. Team Ireland, 91 of them have come home with 86 medals. They were in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. They're back now in Dublin. We'll hear from some of the heroes, plus the Minister of Sport and an Ireland legend.
X-ray, I have a message for your passengers. If you could relay it, please.
I'm from County Drum, I heard a stone mod up there anyway. I'm more famous than the Gaelic team now. I can't lose it. This thing's hard to beat them boys.
I told them if they want a medal, I'd definitely be out at the airport to see them.
Yeah, very special message from air traffic control on their flight home too. That's all on the way, plus we round up the rest of the stories of the weekend, including the dub, so let's waste no time.
98 FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Nathan Whelan, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm good. How are you?
You're recovered from your trip to Amsterdam. How was it?
Just about. It was brilliant. Yeah, it was really good. Good to see you. You have to go and see it if you haven't done so.
Yeah, you wouldn't know Nathan was in Amsterdam if you didn't follow him on Instagram, because that's all he posted for the last 3 days. So, well done. We are glad you enjoyed your holiday. Now, you didn't need to tell the rest of us about it, but you did.
All right, leg to stand on with you coming up later in the show, but I'll leave that till then.
Okay, thanks very much. Now, Nathan, onto the serious stuff. The Sunday newspapers are spread and spread and spread with headlines about John Delaney's departure, but it's not a departure because he's not actually leaving.
Yeah, and I think this first headline epitomises that perfectly. The Irish Mail, the back page says, a vice grip, which is apparently, you know, leaning towards the grip that he has got on the FAI. Also, the front page of the Irish Sun, Delaney's shock of Gibraltar. I'm a fan of that one now. That I like a bit of a pun wherever you can squeeze one in. And the back page of the Star says, a rock and a hard place, of course, between the controversy going on behind the scenes and the poor performance has been a bit of a down week for the Republic of Ireland, has to be said.
Yeah, now the FAI released an email last night shortly after Ireland's 1-0 win over Gibraltar. It dropped into our email account, so just after 7:30, and the title is Board of FAI Adopts Senior Management Review, CEO John Delaney to take up a new role. The board of the FAI has adopted a review of the senior management structure, which will see CEO John Delaney move to a new position of Executive Vice President with immediate effect. Chief Operating Officer Ria Walsh has been appointed to the role of interim CEO by the board as the recruitment process begins for a new chief executive officer. But it is fair to say that John Delaney will be quite a busy man over the next few months, and his new job includes the FIFA and UEFA matters, all of those, including membership of the UEFA Executive Committee, all FAI tournament bidding projects, international relations and support, the John Giles Foundation and more. So he'll be a busy guy, and the Sunday newspapers have, it's fair to say, kind of really gone for him. And there was a great photo last night of him outside the VIP area in the stadium in Gibraltar, the Victoria Stadium, on the phone with the VIP exit sign above his head, and reports about, you know, Niall Quinn possibly being the next chief executive of the FAI, and Brian Kerr has had a go, and the Sunday Times newspaper this morning has got a piece basically suggesting and claiming that the FAI have been paying €3,000 a month for John Delaney's house since 2016, and before that, a house that he lived in Malahide, again, €3,000 a month, and so on and so forth. And this all comes, Nathan, a week on from when the Sunday Times broke the news about this €100,000 loan that John Delaney gave the FAI as a bridging loan. They gave it back to him. himself and the FAI are due to appear in front of the Oireachtas committee about this and answer questions. And again, the Irish football team have begun their campaign. They started with a win and we're not talking about the match just yet.
Exactly. And to be honest, it could be a good thing that we're not talking about the match considering how poor of a game it was. But again, the backlash Delaney has faced over the last number of years considering payment and his role in behind the scenes actions of the FAI, you can tell that people were just looking for something like this, something juicy to latch onto to just try and drag him down, and it seems that they've got it.
Yes, let's hear now from Richie Saldier, former Ireland international who spoke on RTÉ News last night shortly after this news broke.
Well, I have a lot of questions and I think many people do. Why is John Delaney specifically, why is he no longer CEO? Why was this new role created for him? Whose idea was it that he take this new role? The timing of it, I think, is interesting as well. How much did it have to do with the reports that we read about last week? Reports that we know that John Delaney went to the High Court to prevent us knowing about. The Oireachtas committee meeting, or the hearing that's coming up as well, I think that's really that's crucial. The statement we got from the FAI says that John Delaney is no longer on the board, and the same statement says that the board is going to engage with Sport Ireland and the Oireachtas committee about all of this. So does that mean that the Irish public will not get the opportunity to hear directly from John Delaney? Will the Oireachtas committee not get the opportunity to speak to him directly and answer several questions which I think he has to answer? But also, this is supposedly part of a strategic report. I don't know what the merits would be of a strategy that involves the CEO leaving quite abruptly, immediately, an hour after the final whistle, 3 days before a qualifier, in the middle of a controversy, a week after a High Court was called upon to keep things quiet. So loads and loads of questions to be asked.
So if you were to ask someone to sum up the John Delaney story in 1 minute, Richie Saldier has just done that there brilliantly on RTÉ last night. The Sunday Times has learned that the €100,000 loan was required to cover the FAI's payroll costs in April 2017, as the association believed it could not draw down any further money from its banking overdraft facilities. The FAI operates at least 25 bank accounts with Bank of Ireland, according to company filings, and that is a story in the Sunday Times. And in the Sun, Nathan, the former Ireland boss Brian Kerr, who it's fair to say wouldn't be a fan of John Delaney, has had some strong words to say.
He has. He says he has a voice iron grip on the FAI, and he was speaking to Virgin Media. He said, "It's a dramatic day if he's gone from the role of CEO because he's had a voice iron grip on the association since he's been in it. He's made some massive decisions and the association has lost some great people over the years who are not replaced by people of the same quality. There's been a lot of bad feeling about the lack of transparency in the association for years, and I've been critical of it because AGMs have been a farce. The lack of information, the lack of ability of people to ask questions at the AGM on the organisation that their players in has been extraordinary."
Now it's time to welcome former Ireland man Mr. Darren O'Dea back to the That's What I Call Sport on 98FM bright and early. Darren, good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Jamie.
Now, Darren, thankfully we'll talk about the football in just a moment. We've seen the Sunday newspapers, we've heard the views of Richie Saldier. What's your own thoughts on this news that John Delaney is now no longer the FAI chief executive but is the executive vice president and will still have a major role in what the FAI does over the next few years?
Yeah, there was obviously rumours kind of as the game was going on of what the statement would be coming out, and I suppose a bit of a bombshell, and it's a bit of a strange one at that. I'll be honest and say I don't really know what it actually means for the FAI moving forward and what John Delaney's role exactly will be. Obviously it's to maybe deal more with UEFA and setting up certain things for Ireland. But, yeah, it's certainly going to be a big change, and I don't think it's going to go away soon. I think people are going to want more clarity and answers to why this is happening, with obviously all the other stuff that's happened in the last week.
Yeah, and from the point of view of the team themselves, the players, we'll hear from the manager Mick McCarthy in just a moment, who said at the press conference last night that everything that's been going on, even to do with the loan, and even last night the fans had some, as usual, anti-John Delaney banners. Mick McCarthy said it doesn't affect him, it doesn't affect the players. For you, Darren, across your time playing with Ireland and maybe in club football as well, was there ever a scenario where, you know, the manager or the owners or the club were, you know, in the news for the wrong reasons, and would that have an impact on players if players were to, you know, be in the match last night and to look over to their left and to see a banner that's having a go at their then chief executive, for example?
I have been involved in a club in Blackpool, for instance, where there was a serious unrest. It's actually only just got resolved now with the owners leaving, and they should have left a long time ago. But in terms of this situation with John Delaney, no, absolutely not. It won't affect the players in the slightest. And it's good to hear it won't affect the manager, but now the players won't, to be honest with you, probably won't care. And similar to me, they probably won't really know what it means. And I certainly don't expect it to affect the playing staff at all.
Yeah, I think the one thing you would say as well, there's so many staff now in the FAI, particularly involved with the senior international team, from all the coaching staff, the media team, the admin team, in terms of organising flights for players and hotels and that sort of stuff as well. The players clearly wouldn't have ever had that much contact with the chief executive. So from their point of view, it shouldn't change too much. And what we hope will change, Darren, is their performance on the pitch last night, a 1-0 victory in Gibraltar, in front of the Rock of Gibraltar, an unbelievable setting for a football match from an aesthetic point of view, for images and photos and stuff. The wind, the Astro, the lack of chances, but that Jeff Hendrick goal and 3 points on the opening night is all Mick McCarthy wanted, and he'll be happy. They're back in Dublin now getting ready for Georgia on Tuesday.
Yeah, I thought Mick McCarthy, kind of as usual, was very honest and he was spot on. It was a horrible night. It was one that needed a win vitally, and we got it. But in terms of performance, I don't want to judge the lads too much on the performance, because you could quite clearly see how windy it was. The pitch doesn't help against a team that were just dogged and tried to stop Ireland, and in fairness did so and did well for large spells of the game. But we got the win and got out. But I'll be judging Ireland a lot more after Georgia and Mick McCarthy rather than now, because I think, as Mick McCarthy said, it was a night for professional performance, which I thought Ireland were. I thought they were professional. I thought they did the job right. They stayed patient with it and got the win in the end. But not a night for pure football. That was that's for certain.
Let's get the views now of the Ireland manager, Mick McCarthy, who spoke to the media directly after the game last night in Gibraltar.
This was set up for it. This was absolutely set up for an upset tonight. This, playing on the plastic, blowing a gale, a team that have been together and done all right and got some decent players, it was set up for that. I said that to the players beforehand. I said, no, we can only stop it. And what I did say to him, I said, oh, you can... Well, and I said to the staff, and I didn't make a fuss of it to the players. You turn up, you win, you get 3 points, and then you can whinge all you want about the stuff. But I'm not inclined to, because we'll play better. We'll play better and lose, probably.
And you can actually hear the wind even in the background there. Mick McCarthy is indoors at a press conference and you can still hear the wind outside, Darren. And we spoke last weekend on the show just about these type of games and the small stadiums and, you know, what the players would need to do to win the match. And they have just done enough to win that match as well. And from their point of view, they'll just be happy to have got the point. And as Mick says there, leave Gibraltar with 3 points no matter how we've played. Would have liked to play better. And that's the one thing. A lot of Sunday newspapers are already having a go at Mick and the players. And just give them a chance. Let them come home on Tuesday, play in the Aviva on a good pitch, hopefully on a good night against Georgia, and judge them after a couple of games as opposed to one match in really difficult conditions.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, no, listen, give them a chance. I wasn't expecting Ireland to play well at all last night. And as I said, I absolutely want to see an upturn in performances from the last campaign, but I won't be making any judgment after last night. And I never would have, even if Ireland had gone. And if Ireland had gone and put on a show and won 3 and 4, people would say it was Gibraltar. So you're kind of, Mick McCarthy is experienced enough. The players were well aware that they were on a hiding to nothing. They got the job done. They kept a clean sheet, thankfully, from a great Darren Randolph save. But that doesn't really tell the story. Ireland were dominant in the game. They just didn't create a lot. They never looked in trouble in terms of conceding, except for that chance. But that just shows you how quickly something can change. And if it wasn't for Darren Randolph and so alert, it could have been a different night. Got the job done fine. But no, I certainly do agree. Yeah, give them a chance. And let's see what they've got on Tuesday night. But I think it's a massive game Tuesday night. It's another one that we do have to win. But you're also looking for, an upturn in performance, because last campaign wasn't good. I'm not expecting to see an inch-perfect performance, because it's Mick McCarthy's first squad and time back with the squad. But I'm looking for an identity to the squad. I'm looking at least a half-time and full-time. You can sit and say, and discuss what Ireland were trying to do, because that was probably the biggest gripe I had with the last maybe year of Martin O'Neill's reign, was that I couldn't figure out what the team were actually attempting to do from the start and what their instructions were. I'm looking for that on Tuesday night, and I think we'll get it.
Let's hear now the views of the manager, who was speaking just about that, Darren. And he was asked by a journalist if there's been a hangover from the Martin O'Neill era, and he had a little chuckle. And after a good training week, he said he'd expect more from the players on Tuesday.
I haven't seen any hangovers of anything. I think that they've all come in, they've all committed. The training was great. I'm not going to sit and blame anything. I've said what I thought about the Howling Gale, the pitch, the team that played against us. Let's give them some credit and how particularly stubborn they were and played well. So let's give them a bit of credit. I'm happy to take 1-0, mate, because momentum is only gained by winning.
Yeah, Mick has also spoken about how the decision to play Seamus Coleman right back and Matt Doherty right wing didn't quite work. You can hear that full interview on youtube.com/offtheball. And Darren, the focus will now straight away be on this Georgia match on Tuesday evening at the Aviva Stadium. Firstly, do you think there'll be an almost sellout crowd there, given, you know, towards the end of the Mick McCarthy or the Martin O'Neill era, should I say, there was a definite apathy towards the team and towards the manager? And I really hope being at the Aviva on Tuesday that it's full for the players and that Irish football fans come out and support the team.
Yeah, so do I. And we spoke last weekend, and I said I was actually really happy that these were the first two games, because I think when you get Georgia at home kind of mid-tournament, it's a game that doesn't inspire many people, but it's Mick McCarthy's first game back at home, back in charge, and I like to think the buzz of that and a new campaign, the fans will come out and support the team. But listen, I think that'll be one game for Ireland to create an atmosphere at the Aviva that I don't think has ever been really created. It's been created on occasions, but they're going to need to perform a lot better, because for the first part of the last campaign we won games, but the performances were so dull that eventually results didn't match them, and we ended up having a terrible campaign. So I'm looking for a big performance from Ireland, and as I said, I'm looking for an identity team that I see where we're going moving forward. So it's a big game. I think it could actually be a pivotal game for us already in the group. So it's a pressured evening for all the players and staff.
Let's hear now from the Ireland boss for the final time on this morning's And That's What I Call Sport about recovery from the AstroTurf pitch and playing most of the players 90 minutes on Saturday night, flying home, maybe only one training session tomorrow and Monday before this game against Georgia, and the special ice machine that the players will be using to help their legs get better quickly.
Let's see how they recover. We've got the cryotherapy unit when we get back, which is the deep freeze fridge that helps recovery. That's been taken especially for, particularly for this game, but for all the other games. When you've got Saturday, Tuesday, recovery is difficult anyway. Players are generally recovering Sunday, not doing anything Monday, and they're back on plane. So I'll see how they all are, and then come to the game on Tuesday, you'll get the team 90 minutes before, like always.
Now, Darren, a cryotherapy chamber or something along those lines, it sounds cold. Have you ever used one, and how does it help? Because a lot of the players will probably start again on Tuesday, and it is a quick turnaround, and you've been involved in international camps yourself where you've had to play two games in 4 days, and every help needed is there for the players to get them ready.
Yeah, the players are looked after, and even when I was playing, the players are looked after so well. I have used that form of recovery before. Actually, first time I did it was out in Ukraine. You just go into basically, as you said, a fridge for it might be a maximum 2-3 minutes. It's seriously cold, but it just aids the recovery. I'll be honest, I all these bits are small parts to help. The players will be absolutely fine. They're looked after fantastically well. The physique that all these players are in, they're athletes, so they'll have every tool possible to help them recover, and certainly I don't see that being an issue in the slightest for Tuesday night.
Now, Darren, very finally, you'll be at the Aviva on Tuesday, and it's not often that you've been able to be over at games because, of course, you're still playing full-time in the Scottish Premier League with Dundee, but you're going to be at the Aviva on Tuesday as an Ireland fan as such, and are you really looking forward to actually being at an Ireland game since you retired from international football? I'm not sure how many games, if any, you've actually been at, and you'll be there with hopefully 50,000 other mad Irish fans on Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I really am. And as I said, I have to admit I'm a little bit nervous because I see it as a massive game for Ireland. We have to win. There's no two ways about it. Georgia home is a must-win game. But I think, as I said, I think the buzz of Mick McCarthy being back, a new campaign, and the chance to to really kick on now is in front of us. So I'm hoping, I'm in a good atmosphere, and we see, as I say, a really good performance from the team, and we get 3 points, and I think 6 points from the first two games, regardless of the opposition, is obviously fantastic. And as you heard Mick McCarthy say, it just builds momentum, and if we can get a performance to match the results there, then it'll be a great night for all.
Great stuff, Darren. Thanks a million. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Brilliant, Jamie. Thank you.
Now, how would you like to be at the Aviva on Tuesday cheering on Ireland against Georgia? Well, I've got a pair of tickets for you to win on 98FM right now. It's nice and simple. Text or WhatsApp, "Come on, you boys in green," plus your name and where you are, and the number you need is 0877 98 98 98. That's "Come on, you boys in green," plus your name and where you are, and text or WhatsApp to 0877 98 98 98. And well done to Kieran from Fairhouse. He must have had his phone ready to go because his first WhatsApp has come in already. Now, in a few moments' time, we're going to catch up with Stephen Kennedy, Ireland under-21 manager. But firstly, it's Sean Maguire, former League of Ireland player, made his first competitive start for Ireland last night, and he'll hopefully be banging in some goals at the Aviva on Tuesday. He's been speaking to 98FM's Nathan Murphy.
Unbelievably proud to, you know, make my first start, competitive start for Ireland. It was tough conditions out there, considering artificial pitch, windy conditions, very open ground, but it was still no excuses. Thought we could play miles better than we actually did. But, you know, to start the campaign, there's, you know, you get no complaints. We have the 3 points and, you know, we look forward to Tuesday.
It's only half an hour since the game finished up, but have you been able to identify maybe any reasons why you didn't play miles better?
Probably a bit of nerves. Obviously, I suppose everyone has a clean slate with the new manager. You know, everyone wants to impress. I think we made tougher times for ourselves. You know, they made it difficult. Obviously, 2 banks of 4. And you suppose my game is, you know, in behind, stretching the fences, and I particularly couldn't do that in the first half, only a couple of times. And the first 10-15 minutes, second half, I thought I'd done a bit better in terms of, you know, stretching the fence, getting in behind and creating chances. And ultimately, obviously Didsey got in behind and slipped Jack through, and, you know, it was an important goal at an important stage. And, you know, all that matters today is 3 points. Obviously we could play miles better, but as I said, 3 points is the most important thing.
Do you come off the pitch then happy that you got your first competitive start, or frustrated that you maybe weren't able to make the impact you wanted?
More so an impact that, you know, that I should be setting myself. Obviously it's great to start from a country for first competitive start. It's a great honour for myself and for my family and stuff, but I thought it could have been a game where I could have saw myself getting my first goal, but wasn't meant to be. I'm sure. Hopefully there'll be a chance to get that first goal Tuesday night. I particularly didn't really get many half sniffs tonight. So, I'm not too prepared that'll dwell on it too much. I'll, you know, gain confidence from, you know, picking up a win today and just moving on.
Yeah, Ireland's Sean Maguire speaking to 98FM's Nathan Murphy in Gibraltar last night. Now, Nathan, early days, but Ireland top of the table along with Switzerland, two teams on the top.
They are indeed. The 4 teams out of the 5 took part in the group. Obviously, Denmark yet to play, which would be one of the favourites. Switzerland sit top. They beat Georgia 2-0. Obviously, we beat Gibraltar 1-0, and Denmark are third yet to play a game. That's how it stands currently.
Yes. Now, tell me about the Ireland under-19s, who will be playing in the European Championships in Armenia in July.
Yeah, they will indeed. They qualified for the under-19s championship. They took part in 3 elite round qualifiers over the past week, winning the first 2 games. They beat Romania 5-0, and they recently just beat Azerbaijan 3-1. Goals from Tariq Wright, Jason Wright, and captain Jonathan Ofolobi helped Tom Marsoi qualify with a game to spare. A big shout out to St. Pat's man Brian Maher, who saved the penalty to help the lads on their way for the second game in a row, and also Bowes man Andy Lyons, the nephew of the late great Johnny Lyons, 98FM legend. Get a bit stumbling there. The last game takes place on Tuesday against Russia at Krasnodar Stadium. Kick-off is at 2 o'clock Irish time, so best of luck to the lads in their last game.
Yeah, and Bowes Ali Ragba came on in that game as well. And Nathan, I got my Johnny Lyons tattoo. Do you like it?
I saw, and I heard that you cried like a little baby.
I did, I cried like a little girl. My JL14 for Johan Cruyff with the orange love heart. Very sore, but I'm very happy I got it. So yeah, thanks to everybody out there in the body studio in Malahide for looking after us in that one. Now on the way after the break, we're going to talk to Stephen Kenny, the Ireland under-21 manager, ahead of their first competitive game later on today in Dublin against Luxembourg. And then it's all about the Special Olympics, who brought home just a few medals from Abu Dhabi.
98FM. Now that's what I call sport. With the Liverpool Football Club Store, ILAC Centre. We are Liverpool. Means more. 98 FM.
You're very welcome back. Nathan, a busy day for the boys and girls in blue.
They are indeed. Dublin seniors take on Cavan in the Allianz National League at Kingspan Breffni Park. Throw-in there is at 2 o'clock. It's a huge day for Matty Kenny's men. They take on the All-Ireland champions Limerick in the league semi-final in Hurling. That game throws in at 1:30 at Nolan Park. And then the Dublin ladies footballers look to seal a spot in the semi-final when they take on High Flying Galway at Moy Cullen Park. That is also throwing in at 2 p.m.
Now tell me about the Pro 14 action.
The Pro 14, it was a bit of a disappointing one for Leinster. They, of course, lost 28 points to 11. That was on Friday afternoon. Michael Bentz was the choice scorer for the Blues there, but a disappointing evening overall. Connacht beat Benetton 29-14, while Ulster beat Southern Kings 33-19 on Saturday, with Munster coming from behind to win 31-12 against Zebre at Thomond Park.
Yes, Your Honour, that's what I call sport on 98 FM. It's Jamie Moore here on Sunday. Now, a shout out to Kelly Harrington, the boxer, champion boxer, who had her dog on the dart last night, Nathan, and the dog is called Nidge. And he's a little boxer, he's a very cute fella, and he's there with his lead and his little brace on, and he's looking at the camera. Nidge's first trip on the dart. I hope it's not the Nidge from Love Hate, because I think he was a drug dealer and kind of got shot.
He did, so I wouldn't say he'd be actually on the dart if it was that Nidge. But I actually do really like that name for a dog, Nidge. It's something you wouldn't really think of. I might call mine Elmo if I get another dog there, just to keep that trend going.
It's the greatest league in the world. League of Ireland on 98FM.
Now, a quiet week in the SSE Electricity League with four games off due to international call-ups. Well done to Shamrock Rovers. They beat Finn Harps 1-0. Greg Bulger got the winner. They're 7 points clear at the top with a couple of games extra played. They finished Cove 2, Shells 1 in the First Division. Longford beat Athlone 1-0. Drogheda beat Galway 1-0. And Wexford were 2-0 victors over Bray. One game yesterday in Stradbroke in Dublin to finish Cabin TD 1, Limerick 2. We'll have a full League of Ireland podcast on 98FM.com this coming Wednesday. Now, it's time to hear from Stephen Kenny, the new Ireland under 21 manager, getting ready for his first competitive game in charge. It's a Euro qualifier against Luxembourg at Tallaght Stadium at 5 o'clock, and he's been speaking to 98FM's Nathan, of course, and as well Stephen Kenny's going to be the future Ireland manager in a couple of years' time, the senior game. So here's how himself and Nathan Murphy got on.
Alright, we're here in Johnstown House in Enfield. Salubrious surroundings, only the best for Stephen Kenny. Now this is the big time, is it? 5-star luxury you demanded.
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly it's a good facility, and we've had a good training week. You know, we trained in Abbottstown because it's our national headquarters. You know, it's important. I felt it was important. We could have trained out here, but I felt it was important that the players get that experience of training there regularly. It was good to see as well. You know, the first team were training there. The under 21s were training. The under 17s were training. All simultaneously.
It's what a national sports campus is meant to be.
Yeah, I was speaking to a real doctor about it, and you know, that was our vision. Like, it wasn't that long ago the FAI were training, you know, completely in the AUL complex and so forth, and all of the teams and so forth, which is a fine complex, great complex, but it was always busy with matches and different stuff. This is, you know, obviously different. Different standard, where it's exclusively just for the international teams, and so it was interesting to observe.
And with your, I guess, greater role as well as head of the underage teams at the moment, to sort of start creating that conveyor belt. I think a lot of Premier League teams do it as well, where all the teams train in the same place, and sort of you walk down the corridor and you try and progress through your career. That as the under 21s start seeing players move to the next pitch, it's a very straightforward inspiration.
Well. You know, it is really, because the 17, under 17s would like to see themselves in the under 21s, and the under 21s would see themselves with the first team. And you know, and obviously that's only human nature.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, and it's good to be inspired and good to have that thought process and the opportunity to try and aspire to play at that level.
Have you found dealing with these 18, 19, 20 year olds? I know you would have had them at club level as well, but millennials have a different way of looking at the world, a different way of communicating. Have you had to learn some things over the last few months as to how to get your message across? Is it all bite-sized little WhatsApp chunks of information?
I've only been together 3 days,
yeah.
Really. So it's early days to make sweeping statements in regards to my impact.
You've got a Snapchat account, don't you?
I think we've obviously given the players an idea on how we want to play, and you know, the concepts of what we expect, and you know, the ideas from the individual units, whether it be the back forward, midfield, the attacking players.
How have the last 3-4 months been? Have you had time to take a holiday, to draw breath, to spend time with your wife and the family and say, bloody hell, look where we've got to?
No, not really. No, just been focused on, you know, on it's been a quick, you know, it's only been appointed the last couple of months, so I've had to obviously get up to speed with all of the players quickly, and you know, that involved travelling around England for large portions of the last couple of months, just going to matches, which is great. That's great to be able to do that. It's a privilege to go and be involved in the international setup and to be manager. And I think so it was a great opportunity to see a lot of games, a lot of the under 23 games, really. Some, obviously, some of the players playing in League Two, and to go to games in Ireland also to watch the teams here, and see the players. So I just wanted to really get up to speed as much as possible, which isn't easy because there's a large number of players, and I'm still learning about them. You know, so I've still a lot to learn about some of the players.
It must though be like a huge thing for you and for your family to have achieved this, because like anyone who knows your story and the various clubs you've gone to and travelling over to Scotland and the frustrations and disappointments along the way, to, I guess, on a personal level, to know for the next 4 years, like even from a crudely financial point of view, that like you're a little bit more comfortable, that actually it's a very rare thing in football management that you can actually have a little bit of a long-term plan.
Well, I think I think for me, you know, I think the main, you know, the main excitement really is it's a great opportunity. That's the way I view it. It's a great, it's a privilege, it's an opportunity, and I'm going to go and manage the under 21 team this campaign. And the Irish team, they've never qualified at under 21 level, and obviously we're in the Toulon tournament in June, which we've not been in for over a decade, and that gives a lot of the young players a chance to play against a lot of top European teams in a good tournament. And you know, in the meantime, I can sort of, as well as focused on doing a good job, which is what I have to do, I can't diverse from that. I can also maybe, you know, consider best practice at a lot of international teams, and obviously I've started to do that also.
Your programme notes with Dundalk were always interesting and fascinating, and you were never afraid to touch on social issues and your support for nurses. And again, at the PFAI Awards last year, you know, you gave an impassioned speech about homelessness. You're going to become probably one of the most high-profile public figures in the country over the next couple of years. Is that something, that side of it, the role of taking a greater interest in Irish life, you need to push to one side, or is that something you're going to embrace going forward?
You know, you can't ignore other aspects of life. You know, I don't think you can. You know, I think I'm focusing very much on the football. I think that's what I need to do, and focus on the football. But you can't ignore. You know, you have to have you have to have an opinion on things. That's part of life.
Would you feel? And maybe it's an impossible question to answer. As a senior manager, would you feel comfortable talking about those issues with I guess the influence you will have?
Yeah, I don't think necessarily just whether I'm a manager of, you know, if you're a manager of a team or a club team, you know, I don't see myself changing in any regard. You know, I think you are who you are, and I think if you have an opinion, you want to express it, that's fine. You know, I don't see myself changing in that regard.
So Luxembourg on Sunday, I'd imagine you can't wait to get out onto the sideline again and just get managing a team. Do you say in the pre-match speech, hopefully we'll be seeing some of you in Qatar in 3.5 years' time?
No, I don't. No, I won't be saying that at all. I think, to be fair, we've done some good preparation on Luxembourg. You know, when the draw was made, you would think that would be the game that you would want. Luxembourg at home, six seeds. Actually, they've 12 players that were in the last squad in the previous campaign. We don't have any. We've only got one, Conor Ronan, so who only played a little bit. So they were 2-0 up against France and lost 3-2, and they beat Bulgaria 1-0. So they've had some surprising results, a lot of the players are playing with Bundesliga teams. So they've had some surprising results.
They know what it's about.
But listen, that's not to say we you know that it's our ambition to win the game. Of course it is. We're, you know, the players have shown real, you know, you can see it with your own eyes how hard they're working in the matches. With some two great days of 11v11s, right, really high intensity game. You can see it with your eyes, but then sports science backs it up with the GPS and saying, you know, the distance is covered and so forth, and how hard players are working. And I think they put in great work over the last couple of days, and they just, you know, and they will need a day off tomorrow, nice and relaxing day off tomorrow, and get back at it Friday.
Yeah, that's Stephen Kennedy, Ireland under 21 manager, speaking to our Nathan Murphy there during the week before tonight's Euro under 21 Championship qualifier, which takes place at Tala Stadium here in Dublin against Luxembourg. Kickoff is at 5 o'clock. Tickets just to 5 for adults, and I think it's free for kids under 12. You can get tickets on the gate there in Tala. Now, speaking of tickets, your last chance to win a pair to go and see Ireland v Georgia in the Senior Euro qualifier at the Aviva this coming Tuesday night. Text or WhatsApp, come on you boys in green, plus your name and where you are to 0877 98 98 98. On the way after the break, we'll be hearing the story behind Ireland's amazing display at the Special Olympics in Abu Dhabi.
98 FMs. Now that's what I call sport. With the Liverpool Football Club Store, ILAX Centre. We are Liverpool. This means more. 98 FM.
86 medals, 30 gold, 29 silver and 27 bronze. The 91 strong team of Special Olympics Ireland arrived back to Dublin Airport during the week, and 98 FM's Sean O'Regan was there to meet them and their supporters.
Team Ireland came home with a lot more luggage than they initially went out with to Abu Dhabi. The 91 athletes returned to an emotional Dublin airport on Friday afternoon with a sensational haul of 86 medals. They're made up of 30 gold, 29 silver and 27 bronze. And these athletes were blown away by the reception they got when they landed.
Brilliant and fantastic. It's unbelievable. Incredible. This is the first time in a medal. I can't believe it.
Oh, it's been a great experience. Great camaraderie between the athletes' families, mixing with the families and athletes, and it was brilliant.
I'm from County Drum, Dungana. I heard a storm out up there. Anyway, I'm more famous than the Gaelic team now. I can't lose it. This thing's hard to beat them boys.
The Games, which have been heralded as one of the most successful ever for Team Ireland, saw an action-packed week of sport with medal wins for the Irish squad in all 12 sports. Family, friends and fans lined the corridors of Terminal 1 to give them a hero's homecoming.
It's not just for the athletes coming home, it's for the athletes that are in the local clubs, that they get to see what can be achieved, and when they go out there that they can do so well, and they're actually on the national stage, you know, the world stage, and they have shown that Ireland can bring home as many medals as they want.
The motto for the Special Olympics is, let me win, but if I can't win, let me be brave in the attempt, and she definitely was brave in the attempt.
Minister for Tourism, Transport and Sport Shane Ross shared his and the government's congratulations to those who took part.
It's just incredible. Wow, I've never seen anything like it. There's just a feeling of celebration, of community celebration and pride.
Abu Dhabi welcomed 7,000 athletes from over 170 countries to the Games. Former Ireland international Niall Quinn promised the soccer team that he'd come to the homecoming if they won a medal. And they went out and won a bronze, so he says a promise is a promise.
I told them if they won a medal, I'd definitely be out at the airport to see them. I would have probably come anyway, but I felt really obliged when they went and got the bronze medal. You know, they worked ever so hard together, and it's a terrific achievement. Terrific from all of the athletes, of course. 86 medals, it's inspirational stuff, and I'm sure generations after them, you know, will try and emulate this. It's just a proud moment for them all. But for the soccer lads anyway, I'm here to honour my side of the bargain. They did brilliant, and I couldn't miss it.
And on their approach to Dublin Airport on their Etihad Airways flight from Abu Dhabi, they received this special message from Air Traffic Control.
Etihad 75 X-ray, I have a message for your passengers, if you could relay it, please.
Go ahead.
We would like to pass on our congratulations to all the returning Olympians and medal winners Also, a big thank you to all the coaches and volunteers. They all did a great job representing our country and made us all very proud. Well done from the IEA and Dublin ATC.
Will do, thanks. Hear, hear.
In the true spirit of the Special Olympics, the athletes aren't resting on their laurels, as attention has already turned to Berlin 2023.
Yeah, fantastic. So from Dublin Airport, that's 98FM, Sean O'Regan speaking to some of our 91-strong Special Olympics Ireland team, who've come back with 86 medals, 30 gold, 29 silver, 27 bronze, and you heard Shane Ross, Niall Quinn and others as well. And now we're going to hear from a lady who is the Director of Sport for Special Olympics Ireland, Karen Coventry, who spoke to us live in studio just before the team headed off, and she's back from Abu Dhabi, up bright and early on Sunday. Karen, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, how are you, Jamie? Great to be back on.
Yes, how is the body and the body clock for yourself and all the athletes after being in a different time zone for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, it's quite incredible. We're all starting to adjust back now, just the 4 hours. But yeah, it's okay. It's just the excitement, the highs and adrenaline keeps you going.
Would you believe I was in Dubai and Abu Dhabi like last year and I thought the time difference was longer, so I obviously wasn't concentrating too much when I was on my own holidays.
Yeah, no, we're doing okay. We're doing okay.
Now, Karen, just before we speak about the games themselves, the last couple of days, the homecoming at Dublin Airport, amazing. The Late Late Show on Friday, which you were on yourself along with loads of the athletes, the standing ovation for about 2 minutes when the athletes came out on set with Ryan Tuberty. Just an incredible couple of days. How would you look back on them since you've actually arrived back in Dublin?
That's it. I mean, the arrival home on Friday was just second to none. The cheers of the crowd, the coverage from the media, I mean, you couldn't really ask for any more. And then Benasco on the Late Late Show was in the green room with their families when they came out, and the standing ovation, and to watch the reaction of those families in the green room, just something you just don't experience every day. And you just, the amount of pride and privilege just to be there was incredible. The athletes were thrilled, absolutely thrilled.
Yeah, and anybody involved in sport, whether that be individual or in a team, they say, you know, the minutes after you've won and the celebrations either on the pitch or on the track or in the changing room, and then when you get to see your family and you come home and you see such a support at the airport and then on live TV as well, that just adds to the whole experience of winning and that feeling that everybody wants to have.
Yeah, I mean, those athletes have gone through a 4-year journey in order to earn their place beyond Team Ireland, and they worked so hard, and for the coaches that worked with them over that journey, it was just incredible. The athletes are over there for the matches and the final match for basketball when the girls won. I just can't even explain the atmosphere, Jamie. It was just incredible. The support from the other athletes who weren't competing that day came to support them. It's unbelievable. It really, really is. And the local schools came out to support from Abu Dhabi as well, with a lot of Irish teachers. And the big chant of today was, go east, go west. Team Ireland are the best. You just can't beat that. Incredible.
Great stuff. And Karen, we mentioned 86 medals in total and 91 athletes. Just explain to us what that means for the people who've won these medals. And you could see some of them coming home at the airport with like 5, 6, 7 medals individually around their own necks.
Yes, yes. And like the bocce, you've got a singles event, you've a team event and you've a doubles event. So some athletes have potential to win more than one medal. But each one of them has won on its own merit. And like gymnastics as well, they'll win one for each piece that they do, perhaps the all-round medal as well. But each athlete came home with something. We had medals in every single sport. So each athlete came home with something around their neck, which is absolutely incredible. Surpassed all our expectations.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like to think that every sport that we entered, was it 12 sports we had in total, something like that?
Yeah, that's right, 12 sports. I mean, across Dubai and Abu Dhabi, I mean, in both delegations there. And every single athlete coming home, just with the pride and a lot of personal bests. And I was telling we had 10 personal bests there as well. So the athletes going hard in the heat out in Dubai for athletics. We had a 5,000 metre and 3,000 metre. And to come out with a personal best in that heat just shows the training and determination those athletes have.
Now, Karen, you mentioned the heat there. What was it actually like for the athletes? I know some of the sports are contested inside, but lots were outdoors as well. And apart from just when you're actually competing, when you're actually walking around those countries as well, they can be very, very hot and something that I'm sure yourself and a lot of the athletes would have never had to deal with before.
No, particularly the football. Being out there for 20 minutes aside in the heat was really tough going for them. But I mean, again, like the Fighting Irish, they'll always give their all on the pitch and leave everything there. The athletics was pretty tough going as well. I mean, doing the 5,000 metres in that heat, you just keep going. And to say Alan did it in 24 minutes, you know, it's a long time to be out there, but it's an incredible time to get. I think he wants to get in as quick as possible to get out of the heat.
Yeah, currently just before 1 o'clock in Abu Dhabi, 32 degrees Celsius. So incredible for the athletes to be out and about in that as well.
It is. A lot of training for them as well. There was a lot of sun safety and hydration workshops before they travelled out. They were all prepped and we had a medical team there just to make sure that they had all that they needed in order to prepare them for competition.
Yeah, just explain to us about that, Karen, and exactly what supports were over there for the athletes.
Yeah, so the athletes, with 91 athletes and then a team of 39 volunteers, which was head coaches and a management team, which included 2 medical. So we had a nurse and a doctor out there on site as well in terms of keeping an eye on all the athletes and their medication and all their needs. And then we had a head delegation, which was Emma McMenamin from Ulster, and an assistant head delegation, and a families person, Lucy, who liaised with the 325 family members that travelled throughout the Games, and then a sports coordinator, Ken, who looked after all the sporting pieces of the team as they went along. So huge, huge support. And also, actually, in addition to that, Team Ireland, we had 74 volunteers that went out to work with the Games, and they would have fundraised to go and help. And then they worked out in the convention centre in different sports, run the Games over the 2 weeks out there. So incredible, incredible volunteer support.
Yeah, you're talking about around 500 people there in total. And, you know, we see all the time with Irish teams across the world, and even in Dublin Airport when you guys got home, the chants of ole, ole, ole. When someone is wearing green, everybody gets behind them, whether that be their teammates, their coaches, you know, the parents and supporters of other athletes, all of the actual team, you know, yourself as the director of sport as well. And that's something I love about Irish sport, is that wherever we are in the world, once someone is involved with Ireland, it's that collective kind of team spirit and bond that's really unbreakable.
Yeah, no, it really is. And if you see a green, everybody was wearing green out there. All the families come out every day in their same big green T-shirts. You could find them. Doesn't matter how big the convention centre was, you'd always spot an Irish person a mile away. The friendly face, the smile. It was just unbelievable, Jamie. It really, really was. And we're just so proud to be Irish when you travel. I mean, just the support given to each sport, although people would travel to different sports if they weren't competing. Didn't matter what sport it was, didn't matter who it was. The Green Army were behind them every step of the way.
Yeah, and the athletes competed in 12 sports: athletics, badminton, basketball, bocce, which we learnt about on the show the last time, bowling, equestrian, football, golf, gymnastics, kayaking, swimming and table tennis. That's an unbelievable spread of sports as well, Karen. For you being, you know, the director of sports, and I'm sure being at some of these events and all of these events on a daily basis as well, what was that like, and what sort of things would you be able to tell us about the different ones and the interest in Irish athletes that you saw winning and doing amazing things?
Yeah, I mean, the kayaking venue was out in Courtney's Beach. So for me, it was the pinnacle of the beauty of Dubai. They had the whole, Abu Dhabi, sorry, all in the background, seeing the city. And the athletes just out in the water, really calm, really blue. You wouldn't experience that every day when you come from the lakes in Ireland. It's just totally, totally different. It was really, really beautiful. The open water sea swim in Dubai, the athletes had never been in that type of water before. It was warm. It was lovely to stand there. It was great support. And there was fish in the water. One of the athletes decided she better wear goggles. She was like, there's actually fish in there. But that was brilliant to be part of down there. And the equestrian was superb. The horses were magnificent. Each of the venues just trumped the other one. It was really, really unbelievable to see everything in the one spot.
And then, apart from the sport, Karen, what was it actually like just for you guys and the athletes as well, just to be able to be in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, two incredible cities? As I said, I was there last year myself, and you mentioned the views from the beaches and just a place that a lot of them may never get to go to see in their lives. Did they have some time to go and explore and to enjoy time away from when they were competing?
Yes, absolutely. The first 3 days when the team come out, to go into what's called the host town programme, and Ireland are very kindly housed in Dubai. So they got to see some of Dubai there for the 3 days and went out to the theme parks. So they had a great day out there, just a break from the sport and the stress of competition. And then on their days off, the families would take them for lunch or go and do some cultural things with them as well. So there's nice space given in between the competition schedule for a bit of downtime, just so they get the full experience. I mean, it is all about sport, but you're right in saying that it's not a place that people would have an opportunity to go to every time or every day. I mean, so many family members. We had one family golfer, Mark Laffey, who took 12 family members out to travel with them, and they decided to have a holiday with it. So it was really nice from a family perspective as well to go and have that time together and enjoy for what the beautiful place that it was.
Yes, certainly does. Like a couple of 7-star hotels there as well. I think I remember the Burj Al Arab. It's like, yeah, 1,700 euro a night to stay there. Now, I didn't stay there, but even to be able to kind of see hotels like that, that you may, you know, dream of staying in, and just the incredible places around there as well. Yeah, another, I suppose, excellent aspect of the trip that they were able to go and see those places and, you know, experience all of that as well. Now, Karen, all of this has been made possible by volunteers who you mentioned earlier on, the huge team of volunteers that went out to help. And of course, Special Olympics Ireland need these volunteers to make things happen in future too. And I know you guys spoke on the Late Late Show on Friday just about the inspiration these athletes are for the next generation and the next generation of athletes, but also of volunteers as well. And there's an annual collection day coming up on April the 5th, which is a Friday in a couple of weeks' time. So just explain to us about that. And I know you guys are really hoping more people will now get involved, given this success, to help out.
Yeah, so there's two things here. We hope from the Games that a huge drive from parents who are sitting at home would love to get their athletes involved, and we'd love to welcome them to the family of Special Olympics. And for volunteers to go and volunteer in their local club, that grassroots level, because that's what it's all about, and bring them up to the ranks, right up to in all competition. And then the collection day, it's once a year, we do an on-the-street collection day, and we would love to see more volunteers come out and to help us reach our targets in order to give those athletes the opportunities that they deserve. So April 5th, out in the street, please contact specialolympics.ie and we'll put you in your location that suits you. And we really, really would be so appreciative of any help that you can give.
Yeah, and if you're a social media person as well, Special Olympics Ireland on Twitter at SO Ireland and on Facebook, Special Olympics Ireland as well for more info on that. Karen, finally, what's next for all the athletes? I'm sure a well-deserved little rest, but lots of them will have, you know, their sights set on the next opportunity to win medals and the next opportunity to go and perform for their country.
Yeah, so our next opportunity is we're in the winter cycle now. So for some of these athletes, the floorball competition will kick off on alpine skiing and then the Ireland event next year for Ireland Games for winter games. So it's skiing and floorball is what Ireland compete in that. And at the end of the closing ceremony last week, they hand over the flag to Sweden. So Sweden is the next host of the winter games. And then the summer games after that in 2023 will be in Berlin. So the road is paved out and we're ready to go.
Great stuff. That's the voice of Karen Coventry, Director of Sport for Special Olympics Ireland. Massive congrats again, Karen, from everybody here at 98FM to yourself and all the athletes. Well done. I will speak to you soon.
Thanks a million, Jamie. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Yeah, great stuff from Karen Coventry there from the Special Olympics Ireland. That is it for another week on the That's What I Call Sport. Thank you very much for listening and to all of our guests. More from all of them in the podcast section of 98FM.com. Special Olympics, we had Stephen Kenny, the Ireland 21's manager, and all of our chats as well about John Delaney and his future with the FAI, Mick McCarthy, Sean Maguire, and more, all in the podcast section of 98FM.com. Now, the winner of a pair of tickets to go and see Ireland against Georgia at the Aviva Stadium this Tuesday in a Euro 2020 qualifier is Marty Abbott from Glasnevin. Well done, Marty. We'll be in touch with you very shortly. Have a great Sunday, folks. Best of luck to the Ireland 21s and the Dubs, of course, with three teams in action. And we'll speak to you next weekend. See you. Bye-bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with the Liverpool Football Club Store. ILAC Centre. 98FM.
Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, folks. Bye-bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport. Get the full show every Sunday morning from 9 only on 98FM.